When he received the news of the surrender, Edward Tommy Thomas had absolutely no idea what to do, where to go, how to comport himself. Surrender was not on the technical or emotional map of the U.S. Army, nor was it a subject that had been discussed in his training. The word was never even mentioned. Thomas was a lieutenant with the Signal Corps, and he had been spending the last week on Bataan with his field crew rigging up emergency phone lines across the jungle near the front. He was a loud, friendly giant of a man, a beaming 6'4" redhead from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he'd been a star end on the Godwin High School football team. He'd had a difficult upbringing, even by comparison to the hard luck stories typically found in the Bataan Army. His father left his mother when he was a baby. His young brother had lost an arm in a trolley car accident and then died of scarlet fever. And during the depths of the Depression, his mother had sunk into a poverty so extreme that Thomas had to strike out on his own. He spent his last 2 years of high school camping out of a rattle-trap car along Buck Creek, living off the meager proceeds of his paper route and his summer wages, tending lettuce in the region's famously peaty soil. He had wanted to go to college, but he couldn't afford it, so he joined the Army, which, in comparison to his life in Grand Rapids, seemed a radiant existence, holding out the promise of good money, $21 a month, and 3 hot meals a day. "Surrender was never spoken of," Thomas said later. "Never. Not even when we knew it was coming. We knew it was hopeless, that we'd been abandoned and were fighting a lost cause, but we still couldn't bring ourselves to plan for the inevitable day. To acknowledge the possibility of it was to admit weakness." Consequently, the defeated foot soldiers on Bataan had no protocol to follow. All across the peninsula, men were in the same throes of confusion that Thomas found himself in. Should they come out in ones and twos, straggling from the jungle with their hands up? Should they emerge onto the main roads a whole unit at a time? Or should officers make the initial overtures as representatives of enlisted men? Of greater uncertainty and more pressing concern was the question of what would happen to them once they gave themselves up. The men of Bataan had little inkling of what to expect. Like most Americans, Thomas was extremely fearful of what his captors would do with him. But at other times he visualized a bright scenario, based upon no particular evidence, in which the Japanese would ultimately give the Americans over to the Red Cross in a mass prisoner exchange. Never had the U.S. Army fought against an enemy about whom it knew so little. The initial encounter between victor and vanquished would involve an extreme clash of two proud cultures whose profound ignorance of one another predictably generated intense feelings of racial animus and mutual disdain. There was a sense in which the defeated Americans had become victims of their own blithely held notions of racial superiority. Before December 1941, many Americans stationed in and around Manila had scoffed at the Japanese threat, firmly believing that if war ever broke out, the conflict would be decided in a matter of days. Americans stereotypically portrayed the Japanese soldiers as buck-toothed, simian-like creatures who were neither clever enough nor well enough equipped to withstand a modern Western army. For his part, Thomas had never given a moment's thought to the Japanese, their background, their culture, their beliefs. Clearly, many stereotypes concerning the Japanese soldier had been wrong, but the Americans had little notion of what to replace them with. Said Thomas, "The Japanese were just the enemy. I had no idea what had happened when I finally met them face to face."